The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The victory horns are sounding right now. Not only does it start the UFC Vegas 62 post-fight show here on MMAfighting.com, but these victory horns are for Alexa Grasso picking up it wasn't as lopsided as the scorecards will indicate, because it was 50-45, 49-46, 49-46, a unanimous decision win, but the fight was very competitive. It was definitely closer than the cards indicate, but a huge win for Alexa Grasso. And she has officially put the pressure on Manon Fiorro when she takes on Caitlin Chookagian next Saturday at UFC 280. And all in all, even though we had some fights fall off that were exciting, we had one drop off yesterday between Bran Royval and Askar Askarov. This is a fun lead-in to one of the more highly anticipated events of the year, not just for the UFC, but in the sport in general. UFC 280 going down next Saturday. Everyone seems to have that circled. This was sort of a whistle wetter, if you will, and I think it delivered in a big way. Huge win for Alexa Grasso, but thank you for joining us. I am Mike Heck, being joined by Mr. Jose Youngs, who's getting ready for a long journey out to UFC 280 to Abu Dhabi. So when do you head out, and how long is it going to take you to get there, Jose?
I head out tomorrow. I go to Chicago, and then I got three and a half hour layover, and then from Chicago directly to Abu Dhabi. So the flight from Chicago to Abu Dhabi, I want to say, is 13, 14 hours straight. And the flight to Chicago is 3.5 hours. So it's going to be a long day, considering I take off Sunday midday and I land Monday night in Abu Dhabi. It's going to be weird landing at 10 p.m., but in my brain, it's going to feel like the middle of the day. And then same exact path back.
There you go. And we are looking forward to your coverage for sure. It's going to be a fantastic week. But before you get on a plane, let's recap what we just saw from the UFC Apex. Alexa Grasso picks up a huge win. She needed this one badly. She wants to keep her name in the race to maybe fight Valentina Shevchenko next. And she did her part, gets a win over a very game, very tough Viviane Araújo. What stood out to you from Alexa Grasso's performance tonight?
Not a whole lot stood out, because I felt like Viviane Araújo was making I don't want to say mistakes, because it was such a close fight, but she seemed more willing to play Alexa Grasso's game. And if you're going to do that, you're going to have a bad time if you're a flyweight fighter. Because, like, I think Dominic Cruz said it once or twice, because I was watching this fight, I'm like, they're throwing a lot of 1-2-3 combinations, and that seems to be about it. And that's Alexa Grasso's bread and butter. And Viviane Araújo hits really hard, but Alexa Grasso is just a better boxer. So the fact that Viviane Araújo just I felt was comfortable boxing Alexa Grasso, just played into Alexa Grasso's strengths. And I think even in like the fifth or fourth round, Dominic Cruz was like, there's a lot of combinations and not a whole lot of kicks or mixing of the martial arts, as AK likes to say. So I wouldn't say I learned a whole lot of Alexa Grasso, just the fact that she's a really high-level boxer, more MMA boxer in this division, and Vivian Araújo just, I guess, didn't make the necessary adjustments to win her first main event.
How did you score it? This clearly was no robbery. I think across the board, everyone scored it for Grasso. I was live blogging, so I had scored it 3-2 for Grasso. I thought it was even going into the fifth, but I saw a lot of people think it was 3-1, maybe 4-0 for Alexa Grasso, which I'm not going to argue with it because the rounds were very, very close, but Grasso was landing a little bit cleaner for the most part. But Araújo had the big takedown in the second, had a lot of control, but didn't do much with it. And I thought Araújo looked pretty good in that fourth round, which made me believe that the fifth round is going to get a little more chaotic than it actually did. But how did you actually score it?
I had it 4-1 for Grasso. I think like that because if, like I said, all of the rounds kind of bled together, it just felt like one 25-minute round at times because it was just the same thing happening over and over and over and over. So it was rounds 4 or 5 I gave it to Vivian, but at that point, I think Alexa was winning pretty comfortably. I mean, when I say comfortably, she was up on the scorecards, but the fight was hyper close. Like if someone scored it 3-2 Vivian, I wouldn't quite agree with that, but I would listen to your argument at least.
Yeah, absolutely. So now Alexa's in a very interesting spot. She's talking to Paul Felder. Paul Felder's so great at giving these fighters the chance to call their shots.
I just wish he would do it in a less awkward way. Like he says it so awkwardly. Like
I hate to do this, but I have to ask.
Yeah. It's like, just stop being so weird, man, and just ask him. But yeah, continue.
So she gets on the mic and says, hey, see that guy over there? He's my matchmaker, and he always gives me competitive fights. So whatever they have cooked up for me, I'll be ready to say yes. I know you're not a big, like, you have to call your shot on the mic kind of guy, but I feel like in certain cases, at least just saying a name or, you know, saying, hey, I'm next in line for the title, it's not really trash talk. You're just trying to claim your spot. And she just left it up to the UFC and left it up to the matchmakers. But right now, should she have at least called for the belt? We still have to wait to see what happens next Saturday, obviously, but should she have called for the belt, and what needs to happen next week for her to get that? Like, because you can make a clear argument that Chookagian with a win should get a title shot, but we've seen that dance already. And if Manafiora wins, I feel like she's a lock. So does she just need Chookagian to win to have a chance at this point?
Not necessarily. I think that there's a couple factors that are playing Alexa Grasso's favor. A, she won a main event, so all eyes were on her. This card was like she was one of the two fighters this card was built around. In a very stacked card, oftentimes you can have a really high level technical fight, but the next fight happens to be Sean Brady versus Bilal Muhammad. You're probably going to forget Kyle Chookagian, Manafiora happened, if it plays out the way it could happen. Because for all we know, Manafiora could go out there and Rolling Thunder wheel kick Kyle Chookagian into oblivion. She gets on the mic and says, Valentina Shevchenko, I'm going to drink your blood, blah, 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 blah. Then, yeah, give her the title shot because you're not going to forget that. Let's see how the fight plays out. But if it's a 3-round 30-27, someone just wins a similar decision, then Alexa Grasso could very well get the decision. She's, 5 or 6 in the UFC's ranking? I don't know where she is in our rankings, the one that matters, but let's see how that fight plays out. But I'm not saying either winner is a lock, considering that opens the pay-per-view card, which is obviously a really important position on a card. But winning your first main event comfortably, and you're representing a country that the UFC very obviously wants to break into, especially with Brandon Moreno winning titles, Yair Rodriguez might be fighting for a belt in February. That card probably needs a co-main event. Why not throw Alexa Grasso versus Valentina Shevchenko on the co-main event of a Perth card? That'd be all kinds of fun. Have two Mexican fighters going for the belt at the same time down under. So there's a lot of things that could play in Alexa Grasso's favor.
That's a great point about the card placement for 280, because yeah, it does open the pay-per-view, but I mean, there's four absolute heaters right behind that fight with Dariush and Gamrot, then Jan O'Malley, which is being talked about more than the actual title fight in the division in the co-main event between Sterling and Dillashaw, and then the fight everybody's excited about, Oliveira versus Makhachev. So
yeah, because we've seen this happen a million times. Do you remember UFC 218? Do you remember what happened on that main card?
I'm trying Max to remember Holloway, which card that was.
Max Holloway beat Jose Aldo, and Francis Ngannou decapitated Alistair Overeem. You know who won the fight before that? You know the fight that happened before that?
That was the Eddie Alvarez-Gaethje fight, right?
No, there was a fight between those two. Exactly. You know who that fight was? UFC double champ Henry Cejudo beat reigning bantamweight champ Sergio Pettis, and you don't even remember because of what happened after.
That's an excellent point right there. I think you just made a tremendous case that Alexa Grasso might be in the driver's seat right now. That's very, very smart. Very, very smart. Well played. An excellent argument. And then you brought the facts with Cejudo and getting that big win over Sergio Pettis, and no one even remembers it because of the chaos of that entire fight card. So good win for Alexa Grasso. Jonathan Martinez was like the buzz of the card, Jose, because you were the Twitter reacts guys. And I was obviously looking on Twitter as I was live blogging between rounds. Didn't see a ton on this fight, but everybody was talking about Jonathan Martinez. What a performance against Cub Swanson. I actually thought that if this turned into some kind of a brawl, that this is exactly the fight Cub wants. And Jonathan was like, all right, dude, if you want to brawl, I'll just brawl with you and I'll beat you up there. And he just looks fantastic. Like, Jonathan Martinez just continues to get better and better every single fight. Did this man just steal the show? Is he getting 50K tonight? I think he's got a chance.
I would imagine he gets 50K. He looked unbelievable. I mean, he had some of the Twitter reacts that people were like, there were two or three fighters that said Jonathan Martinez is now one of their favorite fighters to watch just based off of this performance. Now, Matt Brown did say Brandon Martinez is his new favorite fighter before correcting himself later on to Jonathan Martinez. So let's maybe get one more major win, and then people will actually remember your name. And then if you get another win, people will start to actually spell your name correctly. And remember, there's no H in Jonathan in the first half. So, good win for Jonathan Martinez. He actually just dismantled Cub Swanson. And Cub Swanson looked good until he didn't, because his leg just kind of fell off of him. So that was a fun scrap. I didn't pick a fight. I didn't pick a winner in that, because I feel like Cub Swanson is – his position has just constantly been, since losing to Frankie Edgar in New Jersey, has just been the guy that they put all these up and comers against, like the Moicanos, before Moicano, you beat Cub Swanson, you get kind of catapulted up the rankings. Like, say that thing happened with Brian Ortega. It happened with Moicano. It happened with Giga Chikadze. They tried to do it with Krohn Gracie. Shane Burgos obviously became a big name when he beat Cub Swanson. They gave him a Korean Superboy, and that fight is in the Hall of Fame. Artem Lobov, they tried to get a name off of Cub Swanson. So this happens frequently with Cub Swanson. And at first, he was getting the better of all these up-and-comers, even getting into the Hall of Fame. But lately, it's been rough for Cub Swanson against these people trying to crack into the top 10 in their divisions, because he just, you know, gets matched up with Giga Chikadze and Jonathan Martinez and Shane Burgos and Renato Moicano, who just can kick really hard. And even a new division didn't save him from that.
Yeah, and that was what made this so impressive, is that Cub, a lot of people are just like, oh, Cub's just going to get run over by this guy. And Cub had his moments. He looked good. He cracked Jonathan a couple times. I thought Jonathan's chin held up very well, because that was one of the questions I had in this fight, is could he take a big clean shot from Cubby? And he did. He definitely did. And Cub looked good. I thought he had maybe 7 or so minutes to get the job done. And then the longer the fight went, the more it's going to favor the silence behind the violence. And he did the damn thing. And then afterwards, yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. I didn't think he was going to get run over by Jonathan Martinez. I don't even know if I thought he was going to win. I didn't really have, like, thinking about it now, I don't think I really thought about it too much. But Jonathan Martinez has some weird losses on his record that are much lower level than Cub Swanson in 2022. Like, I'm pretty sure he's lost to Andre Sukumtov and Andre Yule in the UFC, neither of which are in the UFC anymore. And then he's obviously got, he has wins over like Frankie Saenz. But he came in like 5 or 6 pounds overweight, and then he followed that up by going back to featherweight and then smashing Thomas Almeida. And then he kept kind of going to bantamweight. Is he too big for featherweight? This and that. So I don't know if he was going to run over, but if he can get his weight under control for a prolonged amount of time and not go up to featherweight and back down to bantamweight, Jonathan Martinez could be a bad dude in that division. And really want to see him fight Adrian Yanez badly.
That's a great fight. I would love to see that. He called out Dominic Cruz in like the most polite way possible. Did you like that call out?
Because I think Cubs wants us to fight Dominic Cruz.
I don't mind that idea. Or I think I might have somebody else. Yeah, I might actually have somebody else in mind for Dominic Cruz based on this card, because there's a guy who also competed on this card. And for some reason, these two dudes have never been matched up. So maybe now's the time to do it. A little on to the next one, spoiler. So great performance for Jonathan Martinez. I think we're still waiting on who gets the bonuses. I don't know if those have popped up yet, but we will let you know as soon as they do. Nothing yet from the UFC social media account. So yeah, Dusko Todorovic. I mean, that fight went pretty much the way everybody expected. They're just going to, him and Jordan Wright were just going to go in there and just try to punch each other's faces off. Jordan Wright wrestled a little bit, but Wright had him in trouble. Todorovic came back, got a finish in the second round. Rafael Assunção, Jose, 40 years of age, hasn't fought in 10 months. One of the biggest underdogs on the card. This is one of my big talking points heading in. I like Victor Henry. I think he's a great fighter. But he's a good, not a great fighter. He's a very good fighter. But you could be a very, very good bantamweight and just be like the 30th best bantamweight in the world. And that's still like a really, really good fighter. I just didn't know if I had questions whether or not Victor Henry was like a top 15 bantamweight. Yeah. And I would have gotten those answers had he beat Rafael Assunção. But Rafael Assunção came out tonight and looked fantastic. Swept the scorecards, 30-27s across the board. Minus 410 for Victor That's Henry in this fight standard. Was egregious. It was egregious. And to me, I told you guys, I'm not a gambler. I don't bet on MMA. But if I had shekels, I would throw it on Rafael Assunção by decision. And I hope some of you listened to me. I hope some of you listened to me, because if you did, you got paid off at plus 550. You're welcome. But Rafael Assunção, man, this dude looked great. Stop disrespecting this man. He only loses to the best of the best, for God's sakes. This is some
literally his whole career. Guy.
Yes.
Like, his first loss was to Jeff Curran, who has like 60 professional fights and like 40 submissions. And then after that, he's lost to like Uriah Faber, obviously one of the greatest fighters ever. Diego Nunes. Did Diego ever fight for the UFC championship? Or did he have a number one contender fight? I think Kenny Florian, was he the guy that Kenny Florian beat to get the title shot? I might just be making something completely up. Eric Koch obviously was scheduled to fight for the title. And then like what? After that, TJ, Marlon, Sanhagen, Cody Garbrandt, Ricky Smith, like those are top 10, top 5, top 3, top 2 bantamweights ever. Probably should have gotten a title fight way long time ago when he had what, like 7-8 wins in a row? And then he just happened to run into a very angry TJ Dillashaw at UFC 200. that was a rough time. And then I think I remember, who did he beat? Might have been, I want to say Rob Font.
Yeah, Font he beat Sterling Marais. It was 226. Yeah. He beat Rob Font.
Okay.
That was a dominant win too.
He dominated Rob Font, UFC 226, and I remember in his interview with Joe Rogan, he's like, this is the first time I've ever interviewed with Joe Rogan. I'm like, you've been in the UFC for 40 years, and you've never got a post-fight interview with Joe Rogan. Like, that's how much disrespect that Rafael Assunção has had throughout his career.
So, I mean, do you feel like some of that disrespect will fade away now?
I think that he's going to be one of those, if they matchmake him right, and don't just use him as a step stool. Like, Rafael Assunção is going to be one of those, what do you call it? Good feel fights, because he was super emotional after. Because he had lost 4 or 5 in a row, and then he got this win, and he just couldn't hold it anymore. I think people are going to really tune in to watch Rafael Assunção in his next fight. Not that he's going to like be the draw or anything, but it's going to be one of the fights they talk about.
Yeah, great performance. Yeah, you're coming in with 4 losses in a row. Was like, I'm thinking about retiring, but maybe not. So just, if you're going to do one more, if you're going to have one more dance around the sun, do it with Dominic Cruz. These two dudes have never even been like paired up, like never even been like booked to fight each other from everything that I've looked into. And I'm just like, that's stunning to me with how long these guys have been around. Not even in WEC anywhere have these two guys been put together. And I feel like now is the time to put them together. Let's just do it. There's nothing wrong with that.
Would be
Cruz Frankie
fight.
Would have been great. Yeah, it'd be a really fun fight. So I'm down for that. Great win for Rafael Assunção. The man could still do it. I think the move to Extreme Couture was very smart on his part, and it showed in a big way. And then Alonzo Menafield Boy, that was a violent knockout of Misha Cirkunov. Great stuff right there.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
And so from the prelims, who impressed you the most? Because there were some good up-and-comers. Who stood out the most to you before we got to the main card?
Tatsuro Taira is obviously the big one because he's, what, like 20, 21? Looks like he's 12. So he's going to be interesting to watch no matter where he goes. I think he's just his attempts, because obviously he's Japanese, correct? He's Japanese, if I remember correctly. Yeah. He doesn't speak great English, but when he does, it's very endearing. I want to say it has that, like, everyone just kind of like the face you're making now where you smile, but you're, like, that's the face people make whenever Tatsuro Taira like gets really excited and tries, like when he was trying to tell me about eating In-N-Out back in the day, everyone was talking about that. And obviously Joe Anderson Brito, I think, deserves a big jump up in competition. He looked really impressive, and I would say Pete Rodriguez, but he did just crush Mike Jackson. So
We have bonuses. We do have bonuses.
How many?
Yeah, guess them.
How many?
We have a fight. I will say we have a fight of the night. It's the normal bonus structure.
So two performances in one fight?
In one fight.
Probably Alonzo Menafield and Jonathan Martinez for performance, correct?
You got one out of the two.
Is it Jonathan Martinez? Is that the fight of the night?
Oh, no.
Is the fight of the night the main event?
No.
I have no idea then. Tell me.
Fight of the night is Todorovic versus Wright. Jonathan Martinez got a bonus. And what a segue. Just as you were talking about the man, Tatsuro Taira gets the other bonus. For his sixth career submission win, his first UFC finish, now 12-0, 22 years of age. Just a delight. Just a delightful human being. Had the chance to speak with him before. Just such a nice kid. He's going to be a problem, man.
Let's go with Todorovic and Jordan Wright were the fight of the night.
That is fight of the night.
Oh, I hope Jordan gets another fight then. It'd be weird to cut a man off a fight of the night, but I guess weird things have happened.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's never in a boring fight ever.
You know what they're going to do? They're going to, like, Bo Nickel's going to beat Jamie Pickett. And then they're going to be like, oh, Jordan Wright beat Jamie Pickett. Let's feed Jordan Wright to Bo Nickel. That's
probably going to happen.
That's a bummer.
Oh, man. I mean, that would just be, that would be wild, man. That would be wild. I agree with your Tetsuro Taira pick. That guy's real good. Pete Rodriguez, that was just vicious as hell. Brito's real good. I mean, he treated Lucas Alexander accordingly. I think Manny Martinez has a ton of potential, and you could see it in the man, but just didn't come out. I mean, Brandon Davis is a dog, but James Krause just yelling at him and just going all Krause-y on him. And then they go to commercial right in the middle of the good stuff. So good win for him. Jacob Malcoon too.
I just looked up because I wanted to see, because I couldn't remember if Jordan Wright was on a 3 or 4 fight losing streak. Now he's on a 3 fight losing streak, has lost 4 or 5. And then I was like, well, who did Dusko Todorovic fight? Like, these two have literally never had Jordan Wright's 4 losses in the UFC are to Joaquin Buckley, Bruno Silva, Marc-Andre Barrio, and Dusko Todorovic. And technically, he lost to Fluffy Hernandez on the Contender Series, but was overturned to no contest when Anthony Hernandez tested positive for marijuana. That's a silly thing all in itself. And Dusko Todorovic, his losses were Chidino Jokwani, Greg Kopp, and Puna Soriano. Like, those two have literally fought the people that are will kill you in the ranges of 15 to 20 rankings. That's tough outing for both men.
And then maybe Bo Nickel could be waiting in the wings for either of these two guys. So there you go. That's the card. A nice, tight 11 fights in and out. Got a lot of hype for UFC 280. And all in all, I thought this is a pretty good card. I think it delivered. It wet our whistles. It was a nice little go-home show for UFC 280. And yeah, it was good. It was fun. Let's see what the peeps have to say about the festivities. Let's bring in Casey Lydon. There he is.
Wiping away my tears. My coach, Victor Henry, took a tough loss tonight. Awesome fight, though. Wait, hold on a second. Old school Sensei showed up tonight, by the way. That was like... Man, talk about fighting a guy in the wrong night. Since I was like so prepared, that story he told about basically jumping in a car and just showing up at Extreme Couture was unbelievable. Like that's crazy, and that just goes to tell you what a great coach and what great people Eric Nixick and the people at Extreme Couture are, because they completely gave Rafael Sensei that y'all must have forgot type of moment, for us as fans. And Victor being such an aggressive fighter and exciting fighter, it just played so well into Sensei's game plan. And it was just not coming back from that. And congratulations, Mr. Sensei. So it was very odd because it's been a while since I've been as a media member talking to you guys, had someone so kind of close to me in a fight this big. So I wanted to make it very clear who I was going for and who I had, but
it's why I don't pick Ryan Bader fights.
Yeah.
He literally was the referee and the coach in my 2 amateur fights.
Yeah.
Just can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And watching it just as a journalist, from very
tough, man.
It was tough, but watching your friend lose like that, it's tough, but man, since I look great tonight. And but I think like almost a lot of the losers, there's some cards where the guy that loses just looks bad. Like Mike Jackson didn't look like a UFC level fighter tonight. Let's just call it what it is. But Victor Henry, Cub Swanson, even Jordan Wright, I thought they all looked good in their losses. And I think that's a sign of a good card. Like even Viviana, like she looked great in a loss. And that's why I just really liked this card tonight. I liked this card going in. I mean, I knew it wasn't a great name value card, but I liked the matchups, and I thought the main event had lots of high stakes, and it delivered. Sorry.
Yeah,
I want to get that off my chest.
Yeah, I agreed. I know Jed was not very high on it. I thought this was definitely better than 61. I thought it was better than 61. He was just very, he was very sad about the Brandon Royval Askarov fight.
I mean,
he wasn't alone in that sentiment because that fight was fantastic, but it is what it is. It happened. 11 fights is great. Let's go. Yeah.
Felt good.
He's a good card.
And I love the combination. I know some people are, you know, don't like Dom as a commentator, but I really like Felder, Fitzgerald, and Dom. Because I think Dom brought a very analytical kind of point, a very technical point of view of watching the fights, while Felder was really getting into the mind of these guys and telling big storylines. And I don't know, tonight just had a really good flow. I think a lot of it had to do with the tight number of fights, not like 14 fights. So I think that kind of – the guys didn't kind of get loopy from talking about fights so much. They were very focused on the fights tonight, and I really enjoyed it. Just a great show by the UFC tonight. Just
yeah, and I want Brandon Fitzgerald to do the interviews in the Octagon. I like how Felder – I like getting a fighter talking to a fighter will obviously have fighters open up more. But Paul Felder is just so weird when he talks to fighters. Like, because it just doesn't sound natural.
Yeah, because I think when fighters – when the camera's off, they're going to talk to each other different. But when the camera's yes. on, Felder has to kind of give the, who do you got next? Or when – you know, like things that – that I don't think fighters, when they talk to each other, they don't really talk about, you know, like, so how yeah. many, so, you know what I mean? Like, how many fights do you think it's going to take for you to get the championship? You know, like, they don't say that when the camera's not there. So he feels weird putting that hat on, but I know what you're saying. Yeah, he did have some like, weird moments in
he's
there.
He's like, Paul Felder is just like, wow, great fight. Just stellar job. That jab was just on point. Did you see that before the fight? Because I sure didn't. Yep. Like his question is what you should be asking. The delivery yeah. is weird.
Yeah. he did pop the crowd with Alonzo Menafield though. I thought that was
yeah.
pretty funny.
Yeah. He'll get better. Like I'm not like the questions he is asking are good. Yeah. The delivery is weird.
Yeah, delivery's oh man, and I know Felder was trying to shy away from it, but did it really seem that Alonzo Menafield, he really felt really bad what he did yes. there? Okay, because yeah. it really kind of – okay, I don't know if it was just me, but, like, you could tell he wanted – like, he was just all ready to go, but then he kind of – in that 30 seconds, he's like, oh, my God, I might have killed a man, you know? And
– yeah.
Because, like, they went to commercial and came back, and that's real time, and they had just gotten Misha off the ground. That's freaking scary. To get knocked
yeah,
out.
Yeah, he was like, down for a while.
That's like in a movie. Like, but it doesn't happen in real life. They hit someone in the head in a movie if it block you. Oh, they pass out. That's not real. But that's what it looked like. Like, that was scary. And look at Alonzo. Was just, he really brought down his post-fight kind of speech because of it. But good on Felder to kind of – I think Felder felt that and kind of redirected it to a more positive kind of place. But
yeah, because he definitely didn't want to throw, like, those last four punches that he landed because yeah. – Sergeyev was like already donezo and Mark Smith was doing the hokey pokey and yeah. didn't get in there fast enough. And that last hammer fist was so brutal.
That's
he was like, I don't want to throw this, but nobody's stopping me from throwing it. Boom.
It's all I know how to do. I've been training my whole life to do this. Someone stop me, please, Mark Smith.
Not everyone can be Lyoto Machida.
That's true.
But very to Mark true. Smith's credit, I understand, when the knockout happened, it kind of came out of nowhere. Mark Smith just happened to be on the other side of Sergeyev, so he couldn't really see his face. So he had to go around and get a clear view on it. So it's just unfortunate. But Alonzo Menafield, Jesus, man, that guy. That's just – it's a reminder how dangerous this sport is. That's all. Just it's like, God, these guys are going to hit so freaking hard. It's really scary.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the peeps, see what they have to say.
I don't know how much we talked about this, but... Oh, that's too small, sorry.
How is Maximov versus Malkoon? Didn't watch the prelims. So, for you, Rashad, it was a fight that was competitive for a couple of minutes, and then Nick Maximov clearly hurt his leg. Like, yeah. you could see it. He was grimacing every time he moved. Malkoon took some momentum, and then in between rounds... Nick tells his team, my knee popped out. My knee's effed. It popped out. And they're like, all right, dude, go back out there. And then the referee's like, all right, go back out there. Just I need to make sure you can move on it. And to Nick's credit, he battled through it. But Malkoon just kind of beat him up the whole time. And he was on the opposite side of, like, the Menafield thing. Like, Malkoon was very – very sportsmanlike because he didn't throw any leg kicks. And to Paul Felder's credit, he was like, oh, I'd be smashing that leg right now. But he didn't throw like any leg kicks, just landed great shots, got a couple takedowns, and he won the fight. So yeah, it wasn't 100% the fight it could have been because Makhachev basically fought on one leg for the almost the entire fight, but Malkoon won. I think he swept the scorecard. So,
Definitely. It's just an unfortunate. It was a fight on the pre-fight show. I was really excited about, and I thought we were getting there too because I felt their wrestling was kind of stalemating before the knee injury, and it was going to be a slugfest.
And Nick cracked him. Nick cracked him.
Well, that's why I really like Felder because Felder asked about the leg kicks, and then Malku said, "Well, it was actually his rear leg that was injured, and I'm not a good kicker, and kicking the rear leg is much more dangerous for the offensive fighter because you're open." And he said he just got hit with a hard left hook, and going after that rear leg would open up to the left hook. So he was just like, I don't want to get kicked. The guy can still punch me. This is still a dangerous dude, even with one leg. So I really like how Felder brought that up and Malku explained it, you know, and it all kind of made sense. And yeah, just an unfortunate fight. And but what I guess I want to talk about, I agree that the ref shouldn't have stopped the fight because I think you can, as long as you can stand up, you can still fight. Should Maximov's coaches or someone throw in the towel? I mean, we're kind of getting that Macy Barber situation again. I know it's a different fight, but they know their fighter's done.
It's tough because I'm not training with Nick Maximov all the time, so I don't really know what he's capable of. But we've seen, like, Conor McGregor beat Max Holloway with one leg, and like GSP blew his knee out, and he still would win fights. And we've seen it's.
Tiago Santos almost beat John Jones on one leg.
With no knees.
With no knees.
Yeah. Just two stubs walking across, almost beat John Jones.
It's the tough greatest fighter ever. This one just feels different because you could see it on his face, and I guess other fighters have a better poker face. You know, does that make sense? So like you'll see like my knees, like remember like the famously George St. Pierre's like, I tore my groin. And then Greg Jackson's like, I don't care.
Hit him with your groin. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like maybe this is the first time Nick has faced something like that. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, it's just different. But we've seen like Duke Rufus throwing the towel for a broken hand. But then we've seen fighters win fights with a broken hand. But he knows Anthony needs his hand. Yeah. So it's just like maybe it's just a different. I don't know.
I'm not accusing the Maximov
right
coaches doing the wrong thing. I just think the question should be asked, and it was just unfortunate. I hope he's a tough dude, Migs. I don't know.
Yeah, man.
It was a tough fight. It was unfortunate for both fighters, honestly, because then Malku's win kind of is a bit of an asterisk, but he got the win, so a bit, you know.
I picked him to win anyways. I still thought he was gonna win the fight. I just thought he did. Even with the one leg thing, can we graduate Jacob Malkoon from Robert Whittaker's training partner to just him being his own man now? Enough is enough.
Did they mention that in the
car? I thought the Brendan Allen fight was enough to graduate him. And I think he should just be Jacob Malkoon, his own man at this point.
Well, you could. Yeah. Nick Maximov should probably be more than Nate Diaz's friend.
Yes.
Wow, that's on the other side.
Both sides. This is true.
I think he's shed that a little bit more. Like, I mean, Nate just goes to every fight, so it's hard. Nate's just so supportive of this kid that he's always going to be around. Like, he was in the building for the fight, so it's not like Rob Whittaker flew in for Malkoon's fight. So, but yeah, it was unfortunate. Jacob's a good fighter. Nick will be back, and I think maybe just what we were talking about with Felder interviewing him, maybe they just. From the research and all the film study they did on Malkoon, they're like, all right, well, this dude's not going to throw a bunch of leg kicks at you, so you're good. Like, he was fighting a middleweight Chris Gutierrez or Jonathan Martinez. Maybe they look at it a little bit differently, but for this case, maybe they just felt like that threat wasn't really there.
I think the winner of Petrovsky Turman should fight Malkoon on the Perth card.
I like that idea.
All right.
Two middleweights that are like 35th in the rankings.
Yeah, I like that. It's a good matchmaking right there.
Suck it, AK.
Patrick, when Martinez called out Dom, I feel like young fighters disrespect legends of the sport, calling them easy wins. All the Korean zombie callouts feel the same. Agree or disagree?
Did Martinez say Dom's an easy win? I thought that was, did I not hear it right? I thought it was just.
I just don't think Jonathan Martinez has a disrespectful bone in his body. Like the only people I've ever heard Jonathan Martinez disrespect were the judges in Texas. Other than that, because everyone feels like he got hosed at that fight in Texas that night where like that was the Dominic Reyes. Was that the Dominic Reyes, John Jones card?
I think so.
It was that card, right? Where all the, there were so many wonky judges' scorecards. Oh. And John was pissed about that. That was the most I interviewed him like a couple days after that. It was the most I've ever heard him talk and the most I've ever heard him talk since. But yeah, I don't remember it being a disrespectful call out.
No.
And he didn't like Dom was in the building. He didn't look at Dom and like point at him. He was just, said it to Paul.
Yeah, it was just.
And then Brennan's like, what do you think, Dom? I'm like, oh yeah, Dom's like right there.
Yeah.
Dom's like, all right, cool. But yeah, I don't think that fight's gonna happen. By the way,
no, I don't think so either. But I thought it was a fine call out. To me, shoot your shot, bro. Yeah, shoot your shot. He's right there.
Yeah, that's a shot I'm okay with. Like Joe Anderson, like even Joe Anderson Brito calling out Dan Ige. Don't hate it. It's not gonna happen, but I don't hate it. It's like Joe Anderson Brito called for a title shot. It's not like Jonathan Martinez called for Chito Vera.
Yeah,
he called for Dominic Cruz, and if they made it, no one's gonna complain about it. But I just don't think that's a fight Dom's gonna be all that interested in right now.
No, not at this point. Not coming off that bad knockout. No. Sorry, Mr. Martinez. No. Good try. But
I like your attitude though.
Yeah. But my impression was when Dom was talking about the fight, he was talking about how big Martinez was and how
huge.
He might have been bigger than Cub, to be honest.
Definitely.
I think I felt when Dom was saying that, he was really saying, holy crap, I'm a flyweight. I guess what Dom was thinking, like, I'm a flyweight compared to these two guys.
I don't think Dom's going to go to flyweight.
Oh, no, I don't think he's going to go to flyweight, but I just think, like, he's realizing, like, Cub's been a featherweight his entire career, but that was also 10 years ago. All these guys are just bigger now, and these new guys, these new 35ers are now bigger than the veteran featherweights. Jose Aldo's a great example. We used to think of him as a big featherweight. That's what we thought. Turns out he's just a regular bantamweight. You know, it's just
even like Adrian Yanez is much bigger in person than you'd think he is. Mm-hmm. Like when you watch him fight, he just seems like a normal bantamweight looking dude. And then you actually stand next to the guy, you're like, wow, you're bigger than I thought you were.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. I don't think there's any disrespect there. I get the Korean zombie ones. But even then, I just feel like people are just like, let's go fight this dude. Come on, Korean zombie, let's go. I don't think anyone's saying, like, you suck, let's fight.
Yeah,
and I get it, because, like, the UFC does not match up veterans on their retirement fights almost ever. Like, look at what Frankie Edgar fighting Chris Gutierrez and MSG. I don't even know who Shogun is fighting in Rio. Like, this is what happens. Like, if Jonathan Martinez, maybe he is paying attention to all this, and he's like, hey, they're matching up a bunch of people on the way out with a bunch of up-and-comers. I'll shoot my shot. What's the worst they can say? No.
Yeah. I wonder what Casey Keddie's up to, because I think that'd be a really good fight for Jonathan Martinez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, yeah. All right. Now we talked about Martinez's call-out. Talked about that one.
But I love the Adrian Yanez idea, maybe a little more.
Yeah.
Oh, I just want to see that fight for fun.
We mentioned him briefly, but I felt he deserves to be talked about a little bit more.
My man Tristan, how dangerous do you think Brito is as a prospect in the featherweight division? That dude looks scary. Here's my one concern about this man, Jose. My one concern is this dude just gets shot out of a cannon in every single fight. Just gets after it. And I feel like if he takes on a super durable fighter that is highly skilled, that He's gonna fall into some bad habits. He's gonna fall into could have some long nights. So if he can control that burst of energy, maybe it's just because he was fighting a guy on short notice making his UFC debut that he felt he could just do that and overwhelm this guy. And turns out he was right. But as he moves up this featherweight division and he starts because this division is jacked. It's loaded up. It's not quite bantamweight in terms of depth, but it's very, very close in that sense. But I feel like that could be a problem down the road. But is this something that worries you about him and his ascension in this division?
Yeah, but I think it worries, maybe not worry, but I'm going to be curious about his next fight because now it's out there. Now you like because before when he fought Feely, it was like his second UFC fight, and before that he lost to Bill Algeo, and I just think he ran at Andre Feely, and everyone was like, "What the hell is happening right now?" And then he just not like if they fought again, I think Feely beats him. I just think Joe Anderson Brito just caught everyone off guard. Now the blueprint's out there. If he does what he does to 2-3 more people and they haven't got the memo, that's their problem. But I want to see what he does in his next fight. And then I'll have a better answer.
Dude, let's just chuck him in there with like Nate Landwehr and just let all chaos reign.
Jesus Christ.
see, that would be a great test for him because Nate ain't going away. You could hit that guy 1,000 times and he's not going to stop. So that'll be the true test to see if that gas tank could hold up.
That is true now. Time catches up to everybody.
Yeah. I mean, who knows how much damage. He took a lot of damage in that Onama fight. But
oh, my God. Yeah,
he got so much buzz off of that fight. That's going to be on some top five lists for fight of the year. It should be. I don't know how many.
That fight's a feather. They're featherweights, right? Like, God, Nate Landwehr should have. He should. I was telling like the people backstage in this, like if I was Nate Landwehr and you just because he always talks about like, you know, a prize fighter makes a lot of money, this and that. He should have just taken the mic and just be like, hey, fat Patty Pimblett, I'll fight you at 155. Let's go. Wow. I'm going to cut your head off in Madison Square Garden. Then I'd be like, oh, I'm here for it. But he didn't. Blew it.
I don't know. He called somebody out. I forget who it was. I don't remember.
He called someone out called out Shane Burgos, who then went to PFL.
That's
like right. The next day.
That's the best. And then he goes on Ariel's show. Burgos makes the announcement. And then Ariel tells him that, oh, you didn't know he was on my show earlier? He goes, yeah. He goes, to go on the PFL. He goes, oh, damn. I didn't know that. That was hilarious.
All right.
I mean, look, Joe Anderson's fun to watch. He's must-see TV. We're just going to be at shit. Like, if he fights like a Damon Jackson, what's that going to look like? That's an interesting. Like, or fights like that.
Or like a Julian Arosa or even Akeem Dewan, who Julian just beat. Like, they are just technically sound strikers. It's going to be rough.
Brito versus Duato is interesting. This is all sorts of fun.
If Duwadu stays at featherweight, because he
did, that's a great
came
point.
In like 149 his last something like that in his last fight.
That's true.
Oh, Keem Duwadu, Patty Pimble would be fun.
I think you're good, gentlemen.
That's it.
Yeah. Now we're getting lots of questions about next week. But we're going to keep it focused on tonight, guys, because we're going to have lots of time to talk about next week.
So much time to talk about it. Tomorrow we will put a bow on this event. AK and I will be back for some matchmaking on to the next one. I have to say, I cannot wait for that show to be done. Not because I don't like doing it, but because I want to wrap the bow officially and then move on to make it officially UFC 280 fight week, and we don't have anything really else to worry about. So there we go. Fun card in the books. Nice tight 11 fights. A lot of them were fun. We got some good finishes, a main event with some stakes. Alexa Grasso might be sitting in the driver's seat right now. But breaking, for how
Casey,
long?
Casey, breaking news. Breaking news, Casey.
Breaking news? Uh-oh.
The Houston Astros have won 1-0.
Woo! Poor Mariners.
The Mariners are out.
Take that, Mariners.
In the 18th inning.
Oh, my God. I apologize to all Mariner fans because that sucks, honestly. You guys are good fans. You deserve better. Oh, man. But go Stros. Nice.
I heard
Seattle fans get let down. The Blue Jays fans get let down. The Alabama fans are let down, and I don't give a shit. And I love it.
And everyone obviously had the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah, of course.
In the NLCS.
Bryce Harper could just bunt a baseball and it's going to go over the fence at this point.
I love Sprott's ball. Sprott's ball. Yes.
Sprott's ball. Let's go. All right. Well, we're almost at UFC 280 fight week, everybody. For Casey, for Jose, I'm Mike Heck. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.